Hello, everyone. Ben and I are joining you this time from Voting Ready Run Studios for another episode of There Can Only Be One. We've finally got around to upgrading our facilities.
Moving on up.
Yeah, big shout outs to Voting Ready Run, some local friends in our magic community for helping us out.
Fellow Highlander lovers.
Yeah, exactly. Gotta spread the good word. So this week, we're sad to report that Ben and I finally managed to lose a tournament.
In my defense, I also won a tournament from the last time that we talked.
That's true. We actually managed to lose two tournaments.
Yeah. That's
we're
going
to need to step our game back up. So the most we've had three tournaments since we last talked to you. Last Monday, you were the winner.
Yeah. Well, two Mondays ago on the 15th, winning with Jeskai again, Jeskai Midrange.
Snore.
Beating out Red Deck Wins in the finals.
Yeah.
And I added more cards to the deck for that matchup. So
it's definitely one of the ways people were going to attack you.
Yeah.
After you win two out of the last 3 weeks, people are going to. You have a target on your head, for sure.
Not to mention my opponent in the finals, Colin Miller, had some bad luck with his draws.
Yeah.
That's another key part of my success, is that I am a complete sack.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, I am so lucky, it hurts.
Mostly me.
I would gladly swap that for some skill at this game, but, you know, better lucky than good.
You're not wrong.
Well, and then we had the Staples event.
Yeah, that was a sweet event. We had 32 people show up. It was a good prize structure. We had a bunch of gold-bordered duels given away. I played Blue-Red Wildfire, snuck my way into the top eight. Ended up losing in the semifinals to Craterhoof.
Yep, piloted by local player Noel Robin.
Which is normally a good matchup for me. I think I drew pretty badly, but shout outs to him. He played well.
Yeah. And then, Noel Rob, for those of you not from Victoria, Noel Robin is a local player that doesn't feel comfortable unless he has at least one basic forest in his deck.
I was going to say 10.
Or 10, sure. Like, that's a fair that's a fair assumption.
Famous Gruul Mage.
Yeah, so if you put a green deck in Noel's hands, you should probably be scared. And he's always packing a green deck, so you should always be scared.
Yeah.
Like, he's a fearsome opponent.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. And he ended up losing in the finals to
Josh Lane. And although we say you lost, you may feel a victory in spirit, because Josh was playing a blue-white-red deck that was 96 cards the same as Ben's.
Yeah, he was on a slight variation of my exact Jeskai list, playing Baneslayer Angel, Flametongue Kavu, I think, were the two newest additions to his list.
FTK seems really good in this meta.
I've actually added it to my own 100 cards and was on my maybe it should be in, maybe it shouldn't be in for that tournament as well. Like, the card is obviously nuts.
Well, the more and more green decks that pop up to try and beat you, the more you have to try and combat them, and FTK is one of the ways you're going to do that for sure.
Yeah, and with all these big dragons running around, having protection from dragons and protection from demons seems pretty spicy, so Baneslayer Angel isn't the worst.
Certainly not. Also, there's a lot of red decks running around as well.
Yeah.
Also, both the sort of bigger mid-range flavors and the lower-to-the-ground flavors that are trying to beat the mid-range decks, and it's good against both of those decks.
Yeah, like you were saying, so like the same decks that Flametongue Kavu is good against, Baneslayer is also pretty good against. Because if they're like green-white or even green-white-black, they're probably burning their Swords to Plowshares or their Path to Exile on stuff like Brimaz or powerful
Mantis
three drops.
Rider.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, cards like that, because they don't have removal outside of, like, if they're Abzan, they have Abrupt Decay and Maelstrom Pulse, but they still want to reserve those for probably equipment, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So, and then this Angel just comes in, starts swinging her sword, gaining 5 life. Nothing can actually combat her.
Yeah. And one of the big things is I found is that having creatures that are actually able to block equipment is huge. And Bane Slayer, as long as they don't have like Sword of War and Peace, she can actually block most creatures even if they're suited up.
You and I have been talking about how broken flying is and how like broken lifelink is. First Strike is also just sleeper broken because you never run into it. Like, you can name the amount of creatures with First Strike that get played in the format regularly, like every single week, on one hand.
Certainly.
It's like Thalia and Mirren Crusader.
And Silverblade Paladin,
sure.
Kinda.
All them white creatures.
Yeah, but certainly not very many.
Which is actually... Oh, never mind. I was going to say it's funny because she's got pro dragons, but one of your dragon creatures... like
is pro-white.
Is pro-white, yeah.
So...
But, I mean, that still doesn't matter.
Yeah, but it's... It could be relevant because then she can block their dragon suited up with equipment as well.
No, it's still, actually, it's impactful. It's not just some random ability. I don't know how much protection from demons is going to come up. Juzam doesn't fly.
Well, there were a couple Oath/Reanimator decks floating around, so
that's
you might run into a Grizzlebrand here and there.
Okay, so she's actually real. They can't start gaining the life back once they pay all that life to draw cards.
And what did you play on Sunday?
On Sunday, I was also playing Jeskai.
Okay.
But it's funny you mentioned Reanimator. So... in the past week or so, there have been multiple people piloting Reanimator.
Yeah, Thursday.
Yep, Tyler Woolley won the Thursday with Reanimator. Nelson Salahub, who... Tyler's been on the podcast before. Nelson's been on the podcast. And he was playing Reanimator. And there's a local player, Brendan Nyhoff.
Yeah, he always plays.
He usually comes out to the Staples events, not as much the every Monday or so.
Yeah, he's a busy guy.
But he plays Reanimator.
Certainly.
And that deck crushes Jeskai.
Yeah.
Absolutely flattens it. We don't have Jeskai has zero graveyard interaction.
Yeah, and it's also not running enough counter spells to reliably fight the counter spells that are also played in Reanimator.
Because Reanimator's packing counter spells like Dispel.
Exactly, and also the big problem with fighting Reanimator with counter spells as opposed to other combo decks is because their business spells cost so little mana, like Reanimate and Entomb.
Yeah.
That's two mana, it can even be spread over two turns. So,
and your pressure's good, but it's not incredibly quick.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It could be a turn three, you're tapping out because you need to apply pressure, and that's all they need to play a discard spell and then a reanimation spell, or to play a reanimation spell and have a spell pierce for a backup.
Exactly.
So I jammed Containment Priest into my list, and it's not the worst.
It's a bear.
But then
flash.
Nobody was on Reanimator.
That's true.
So I'm just sitting here with this bear, and I didn't fight any of the matchups.
It has a couple other good matchups, just to speak to Container Priest.
Yes,
it's really good against the green decks. It's really good against Birthing Pod.
Yeah. No, the card is good.
Yeah.
It's just my deck was... I optimized for a meta that did not show up.
Yeah.
Basically.
And that goes back to our last podcast when talking about the... meta-analysis, you have to see a bit of a trend. That's why it's dangerous to see 1 week all three Reanimator players showed up and then say, oh, better pack all my graveyard hate, and then the next week none of them
were there. I knew we were all going swimming, but I brought a Speedo and everybody else was in a wetsuit kind of thing. Like, I can still swim, and, I'm probably not going to die, but I'm not well prepared.
No.
For lack of better terms. Yeah, you almost crushed with the Academy, Tolarian Academy Wildfire deck.
Yeah.
Jeskai ended up winning that, but then this Monday was very exciting.
Yeah, it was.
Very exciting, because the winning list, the finals were
it was a Highlander first, I think, in that someone who had lost a game won the tournament, lost a match won the tournament.
Tim McInnes ended up winning the tournament on Goblins.
And he snuck into the top four playoff at 3-1.
Oh.
And then I lost to him in the first round of the top four. I was first seed going into
That's the first time that's happened?
I think so.
That's pretty impressive.
I don't recall it ever happening before.
So for those that don't know, I imagine Tim has been mentioned on the podcast before.
Yeah, he's the Goblin Lord.
Yeah, for those that are in the Facebook group that have been asking, I'm thinking about building a Goblins deck, or this is my Krenko Commander deck, how do I turn it into a Highlander deck?
Yeah.
Almost always, Mac Tim McInnes is brought up, because the guy knows Goblins.
Even if he doesn't say bring himself up, someone else certainly points you in his direction.
Yeah. And
he's currently playing a really interesting Goblins build. He's sort of varied away from the classic, like, play only Goblins, sort of sacrificing some powerful spells for the consistency and synergies. But now he's playing three color. He's playing Jund Mana Base. He's playing cards like Kolaghan's Command, Deathrite Shaman, Abrupt Decay.
Some of the black Goblins as well, Boggart Harbinger, Earwig Squad,
Mad Auntie.
Yeah, so
Spike Jester.
Good cards.
So yeah, he's upped his power level to sacrifice a little bit of consistency, but he has some really explosive draws, as you pointed out before. I think you're going to need to repeat that story.
I lost to him in the Swiss, and the first two games were, you know, interesting back and forths. I believe. I think I might have had a bit of a degenerate Mantis Rider with GTA game. Something. But usually that's how that happens.
Is that hard for Goblins to beat?
Yeah, it's quite good.
Vigilance GTA.
And we go to game three.
With flying.
And my hand seems, you know, pretty all right. It has Mana Drain in it. I can ramp up into Sarkhan, I think.
All right. It's reasonable.
The Dragon Speaker, the 5 mana. Yeah. Yeah. And he goes land Mox Jet, Mox Emerald, Chrome Mox, and then plays Goblin Chieftain and cracks for two.
Uh-huh.
And so
it's a fast start.
It's very fast, but he's low on cards.
Yep.
And I punted it somewhere along the way, but I don't think it would have mattered, because he ends up playing a gigantic Grenzo, like a 7/7 Grenzo or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
And
Grenzo's the goblin that lets you pay two to reveal the bottom card of your library. And if it's a creature card with power less than Grenzo, put it into play.
Yeah. And because I'm a donkey, I Vendilion clicked him and put the Krenko in his hand on the bottom.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't even occur to me, because I haven't fought against a Grenzo.
Just put it back into play.
And he put it back into play. I haven't fought against a Grenzo since Conspiracy Draft. So I think you can understand.
It's a reasonable time to have not fought against Grenzo since.
So I die horribly, obviously.
Yeah.
But Tim ends up winning the tournament. He beats Trenton McIntyre on Cradle Hoof.
That's a little surprising. I didn't stay to watch the finals, but it's usually a pretty good matchup for Hoof, I think.
Yeah, I used to say that you can't lose against Goblins with that deck. When I was playing it, I was something, or the first while I was playing it, you know, there was a lot of Goblins lists every Monday, I was something like 11-0 against Goblins.
Yeah, it's certainly favored. I think it's slightly better for Goblins players now that they know how fast the Hoof decks are and they need some interaction. They've all started playing Forked Bolt and Arc Trail.
Yeah.
And Tim even has haymakers such as Fire Covenant.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Okay.
I saw the sweetest play on Sunday. I can't remember if it was Tim. I think it might have been. He cast Fire Covenant in response to a Hoof trigger. And
that's not going to end well.
And nugged his opponent's board going to one, and then won the game on the crackback.
Well, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's the power of Fire Covenant. Everybody find as many Ice Age booster packs as you can and crack that instant.
Yeah.
It's, so the deck now has options.
Yeah.
But what I really liked about this Monday is that there were 36 players for this Monday's event and 32 individual archetypes.
Yeah.
Which is insane. The only overlapping archetypes, I think, were, there were a couple of Jeskai mid-range decks, two Hoof decks, and that might be it. I think there might have been, two Rug Tempo decks.
There was one more overlap, I think. I can't remember what it was off the top of my head, but
there were I thought originally there were two four-color blood decks, but it turned out to be a four-color blood and a dark bant list, like a bant list just splashing black, which is upsetting because I thought he was on bant splashing red, and I was all set to type hotline bant into the deck, like sheets, and it didn't happen.
What about Soggy Naya?
Well, we can go on to all the different ways that we can describe that deck. That's for a different show. That's great. 36 people. It's a little less than 40. Still good attendance, though.
Yeah,
it's above 35.
Especially after we had a 32-person tournament the day before. So people are tired.
Usually for events like that, you're going to have smaller attendance after that because that's a lot of Magic.
Yeah, it was a 5-rounder plus top 8.
But, I mean, you can't stop Highlander players.
Yeah.
They're absolutely savage when it comes to going back-to-back.
So I lost in the semis of both tournaments. So in the span of 2 days, I played 13 rounds of competitive Highlander.
That's pretty good. That's the worst part about not doing well, because I dirted out at the Staples event.
Yeah,
because
you
don't
sure
get
did.
To play as much Highlander as you would if you keep winning. Like, that's obviously the best part, is that you just get to keep jamming.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's what happened. So mid-range is everywhere.
Yes.
If you follow the Monday metagame, we have three columns, the combo decks, the combo decks, the control-ish decks, and the aggressive decks.
Yeah.
Such as Four Color Blood, the most definitive aggro deck in the format.
Ben stares into Spencer's soul.
And so slowly but surely, the two bottom columns are getting a bit smaller, and then the middle column is getting bigger. But it's not because everybody's getting degenerate and they're all just playing mono blue and stuff like that. The middle column is people playing creatures.
Yeah.
It's getting bigger because the creature decks are like, oh, hey, maybe I'll add some more disruption. And then the combo decks are like, well, I like to play Splinter Twin and I like to play Birthing Pod. But why not just cut a little bit of those cards that don't do anything by themselves and attack for more? Or, maybe cast Ancestral Recall or something like that. So it's everywhere.
Yeah, Gaddock Teague is currently the bane of my existence playing Academy.
Well, join the club.
You have one out. It's balance.
It's a good out.
It's not a bad out.
Are you not playing Caracas?
No.
Should always play Caracas.
I need some basics.
Oh, no, you don't.
I won the game through back to basics.
Okay, maybe you need a basic or two. But
I'm playing four.
You're playing four basics?
Yeah, two Island of Plains and a Mountain.
Okay, that's not bad.
With rocks, I can usually cast all my spells.
I mean, under a back to basics or even Blood Moon, it's not the worst, right? Because you have Signets.
Blood Moon's much better. I can activate really well off colorless mana and just float it all into Signets and Talismans. And I can even play Chromatic Lantern to get their Blood Moon.
And if you have an X spell, you can just dome them out.
Exactly. But back to basics is a savage beating.
It's also quite good against the mid-range decks. But
yes.
I don't think it's as good as people believe it to be. Because I think a lot of players think that Back to Basics and Blood Moon are just like the hard lock against these decks.
Certainly not.
Which is why are these mid-range decks doing so well, for starters?
Well, they're playing a just super high number of inherently powerful cards. Every card in their deck is super good. They're never dead. And they're the best at what they do. So like their removal spells, they're playing Abrupt Decay, Maelstrom Pulse, Swords to Plowshares, cards like that. So Swords is Swords is your narrowest removal spell, you're doing pretty well.
You're in a pretty good position.
Otherwise, the removal spells can kill artifacts and enchantments or even planeswalkers.
Or
instant speed and do that. Can't be countered. So
the card quality is through the roof.
Yeah.
To the point where I was having discussion with Josh Lane, who won with the Jeskai list, about the different Jeskai lists and how to tweak it. And originally, I think he was also running a copy, but I'm not entirely sure. But I was running Dak Faden, And yeah. I was talking to him about the cart and how I was pretty unimpressed with it. And I thought it was like primarily doubting my own ability at looting. And that's certainly a factor of it, just because like I love drawing cards, but I hate throwing them away. And he was just saying that it's, you know, that obviously can be a contributing factor, but it's also because your card quality is so high in those lists that you don't want to throw anything away.
Exactly. Right? You never have two dead cards in your hand. Like, DAC is great in my Academy deck, because in later turns I can pitch Signets or lands that I don't need and just try and hit gas, which is all you want to do late game with Academy.
Yeah.
But in a mid-range deck where you're looking at a hand of Council's Judgment, Brimaz, War Leader's Helix, and a Planeswalker like Sarkhan, and you have to pitch two of those cards, and you're looking, your opponent has a creature, you need pressure, and you're like, I have two things that can kill his creatures, I have some things that can pressure him, which ones am I supposed to take?
Yeah, it's not
fun. Some cost less mana, some cost more mana, so it's really a lot to think about doing something as simple as drawing two, discarding two.
So yeah, it's cards like that you don't like, you want to avoid, but at the same time, when you're, it's weird to say that you're cutting cards like Dak Faden when you're also still playing cards like Anticipate, which isn't the strongest card. Like, we have access to Impulse and Dig Through Time,
which you're already playing.
Yeah, you're already playing it, but because again your cards are so good, it doesn't matter if you see three. Chances are two out of three of those cards are going to be nuts.
Yeah.
Or at least, even if it's one out of three, then it's probably good, right? It's either going to kill their thing, or it's going to draw you more cards.
Or be a bigger thing.
Yeah, exactly. But aside from blue-based mid-range, because it's not just, you're not just restricted to blue.
Yeah, there's a bunch of, as you mentioned before, four-color blood decks, which is all four colors that aren't blue.
Yeah.
And there's also some Abzan decks running around. Nelson, who we mentioned before, and has been around the podcast quite a bit, he was playing a big Abzan deck, trying to combat the Jeskai deck.
Yeah, with Oath of Druids, he had Life from the Loam.
Yeah.
And that's scary.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's not, I mean, it's in a similar position, but there was also a black-green, like a Golgari Pox list, a Life from the Loam list, running around, piloted by fellow
council member
Adam Price.
Yeah.
And there are all these decks popping up that are just, you don't want to face with Jeskai. And you don't want to face them with four-color blood.
No, because they're just, this is what we mentioned would happen. As the more and more mid-range decks there are, people are going to figure out, I need to either go under or over.
Yeah.
And these people started going over. People started playing these Life from the Loam control decks that interact on an axis that those decks aren't good at interacting on. Or you're playing Academy and just going way over the top.
Yeah.
Or you're going under, and that's what we saw last night with Goblins going under all the mid-range decks.
Yeah, the Swarm decks are starting to pop out, and they are very, very scary.
Yeah.
Because you're not playing, like, on a lot of the red lists, you aren't playing Forked Bolt and Arc Trail, because this is just a theory I've had. I sincerely think that for the entirety of Islander, we've been casting our lightning bolts wrong. I think that we shouldn't, in a lot of matchups, we shouldn't be bolting the birds or the Llanowar elves. Like, obviously, and I'm not saying this in the case of that I'm going to bust out a Cradle Hoof list and then nobody's going to forked bolt my Llanowar elves and then I'm just going to natural order on turn three. But if you are against these mid-range decks, right, and they play a turn one Llanowar Elf or a turn one Birds of Paradise, and you have a removal spell, if you kill that bird, then you can't just, like, it's rare that they won't have a turn two follow-up that you'll wish you had killed.
They're playing good two drops, and they're also playing, like, 38-ish mana sources.
Yeah.
36 at the least. So the odds of them missing second mana source are really low. And the odds of them being able to punish you, even if it's not the next turn, but the turn after, for casting a removal spell on something that accelerated them, but wasn't necessarily going to do anything for them in the long run.
Yeah.
Because these games, especially the mid-range mirrors, tend to drag out quite a bit.
They're grindy.
So card advantage really comes down to it. And tempo isn't actually that important because neither deck is super good at taking advantage of a tempo gain. Like, obviously, insane tempo gains like Time Walk and other things down the road can be big plays.
Yeah, little bits here and there playing like Lightning Angel, being able to crack in or kill off a Planeswalker and then still play on defense. Stuff exactly. like that. That's tempo swing, but that, even then, that doesn't happen until turn four, turn five, or something like that.
Exactly. And the thing is, if that happens on turn three or four, it's not a big deal. It's still probably going to die to the first removal spell the other deck had anyways. And it's really the cards that matter, I found, in those matchups.
Yeah.
Being able to use all your cards, making sure you're able to play lands, which is, I guess, a reason to bolt the birds. But unless you sort of have the read that they're going to be choked on lands, and that's the access you want to fight them on, which I'm not suggesting is a good idea, but you're then using a card to kill a card that may not end up being worth a card in the long run.
Like, by turn, assuming that you are going to be able, assuming you save your removal spell and you don't bolt that bird, mm-hmm. next turn they play a Knight of the Reliquary or something like that. Yeah. And you can deal with it then. And then you play your own 3-mana threat. Could be a Brimaz, can be...
completely changes who has the initiative then.
Exactly.
If you're able to, especially at instant speed, kill the threat they play and then play your own, then they're the ones on the back foot who have mm-hmm. to deal with your threat.
And then you get to start using your removal spells proactively
exactly.
while clocking in.
Yeah.
Or your threat's already strong enough that you can just continue to apply a pressure that attacks on a different access, right? You start playing Planeswalkers or Flyers.
Exactly.
And then they have to deal with multiple things. So,
and that's why cards like Vendilion Click, Mantis Rider, True Name Nemesis that can attack almost regardless are super, super strong.
So don't bolt the bird, folks.
Well, in the mid-range decks, the counterpoint I was going to make is against decks like Mono Green Hoof, against decks like mostly just Mono Green Hoof.
No comment.
You have to bolt that bird because they're using that mana for Gaia's Cradle. Their entire game plan is to cast 5 and 6 drops as soon as possible.
I've actually been talking.
Cutting them off at the knees is super crucial.
I've been talking with the other Hoof players, and we're actually cutting the Llanowar Elves from the uh-huh. list. It's just not yep. good, you know? Instead, we moved to Mana Rocks. See, Jeskai can't deal with Mana Rocks. So instead of going Llanowar Elf on turn one, just play the Jeweled Amulet. You can get to Hoof at the exact same time.
Yep.
And it attacks for 6. The turn you play it. Oof. I did
the
math.
Oh, it attacks for 6.
Yeah, it triggers.
Yeah.
At least I think it does. I asked Spencer to do the math for me, and he said it was 6. But you can never know.
So that deck just utilizes this creature so much with cards like Elvish Archdruid, Priest of Titania, Gaia's Cradle, Nykthos. All their real engines that are super scary once they get going. If you cut those off before they get going and keep them from happening until a later stage in the game, you're doing yourself a big favor anytime you play against that deck.
Yeah, and in sincerity, if you're against somebody that's on Hoof, kill their dirds. Their dirtles, if you will.
Yeah.
So speaking about Hoof, and we were talking about Goblins.
And other decks that are good right now.
Let's spread out. Let's start swarming the board here. Now, Jeskai and Four Color Blood, like we said, they play a lot of spot removal.
Yeah.
So going wide is quite good.
Yeah, they're not.
And Goblin, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
They're not playing many cards that deal with a lot of permanents at once. Like, the best they're doing is Arc Trail.
Yeah. I don't even think a lot of them are running Forked Bolt anymore.
No.
And, I mean, maybe they're running Bonfire of the Damned, but that's a different story.
Oh, boy.
But there's more than just Hoof, and there's more than just Goblins, if you want to go wide.
Yeah, you can play any aggro deck with a density of 1-drops. That'll constitute going wide enough for what we're talking about. Any deck that's able to go 1-drop, 1-drop, 1-drop is super, super strong against Jeskai.
And you played a deck that... We ended up going 1-1. Did you beat me with Aristocrats?
I beat you on a Thursday, and then I lost to you on the Monday.
So we've gone 1-1, and I think that when I lost to you on Monday, that was mostly just bad beats.
When you beat me on Monday?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I should have been winning that match.
Yeah, so for instance, on the Thursday in Game 1, you had Sword of Feast and Famine and Sword of Fire and Ice in play for 8 turns, and I still won that game.
So... Now, why is that? Why was I unable to get through all of your cards? What is this deck that you were playing?
I was playing a 4-color Aristocrats deck, no blue. So it utilizes creatures that either enter the battlefield or die, and they have some sort of trigger that ideally makes other creatures. So I'm playing cards like Spreading Thranax, cards like Abzan Ascendancy, which was the card that let me beat your swords that gave you protection from everything except for white.
Yep. Hangerback Walker.
Goblin Bombardment. Planeswalkers that make tokens. Other creatures that make tokens like Doom Traveler, Blister Pod.
You're essentially a token deck. You attrition your opponent out of the game with these cards that don't...
And you...
It's a frustrating experience, folks, because these cards don't really do anything until they die.
Yeah.
But you have so many ways of just sacrificing
exactly
them.
And it blanks your opponent's removal because they never want to kill your creatures.
I think Jeremy had a play where you went Viscera Seer turn 1.
Yep.
Turn 2 Brindle Shoat, which is from Plane Chase.
Yep.
And it's a 2-mana 1/1 that when it dies you get a 3/3 boar token.
Nice. We brought it up on the screen here.
Oh, it's being reprinted. Oh, so that's Vintage Masters from online. Okay.
Right, Vintage Masters.
Okay, so maybe you played it on Magic Online. And so he's got this 3/3, he's scryed the top card, he got this 1/1, and then you just Kolaghan's Command me, like, kill my guy and get back your stupid
Brindle
boar. And then I'm pretty sure you played, like, Abzan Ascendancy that turn, the next turn, or, like, a Sorin or something.
Yeah.
I just can't deal with that. It's too much.
I definitely broke you that Thursday. That was the first time you'd lost with Jeskai. You'd already won, like, 3 tournaments in a row.
It felt bad.
And then I beat you with a deck that looked like a bunch of draft trash.
Yeah, and that's why it felt so bad. Because it wasn't like, oh, my God, I can't believe I punted. Because I did. I for sure did.
Yeah.
But it was more just like a... Why am I losing to this? Right? Your deck is like the deck you're sitting down, you're like, "Oh my god, all these cards are so good." Like all these dragons and these multicolored angels and these are all standard all-stars.
And then I fetch Plateau, play Doom Traveler past the turn.
Yeah, and you're like Blister Pod and I'm like, "Okay." All right.
Not going to kill that one.
And like when you play Lingering Souls, Flashback Lingering Souls, like, that's a very powerful Magic card.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
But that card, it was awful, because when you did that against me, I'm just thinking, like, this card could be any card, and I'm dying. Like, this could be one card you played, Rith's Charm.
Yep. Rith's Charm.
Which makes 3 1/1s, and it's
instant speed.
Yep. Also blows up a...
Non-basic
lands. And prevents damage from a pyroclasm or something
like that? Yeah, prevents all damage from a source of your choice.
Okay, so it has, yeah.
So all three modes are actually, like, pseudo-relevant in this deck.
So this deck, the only thing that's actually hard to find for this deck is the mana base. All the other cards are just, go to your local game store, ask to see the piles that people left behind from drafts.
Mostly.
You could probably build this deck. Most of it. But something like this is perfectly positioned, right? Because you're just spreading out. You don't want to actually kill the threats.
Exactly.
And you can't get through with your equipment.
No.
Right? Because that's the turning point for a lot of these mid-range decks. Like,
it's
four
when
color
they can
button
start
and Jeskai.
Connecting with equipment.
Yeah. It's like you can play a guy and then not be able to attack. Or just like attack and it gets chumped. And then you pass. And then after that pass, like on the turn 4 pass, you keep up removal or 2 counter spells or something like that. And you come back, you nullify whatever they're doing. Then you untap, equip a sword, and that's when you start taking over.
Yeah.
And you can't do that against Thopter tokens. And you can't do that against Brindle Shoat.
Abzan Ascendancy.
Abzan Ascendancy. It's It's not a good way to go out, folks. It's not a good way.
That was a fun match.
Yep.
Couple matches actually. Both of them were good.
Yeah.
So to sort of veer back on topic a bit, some of the other decks that are well situated right now, apart from the swarm decks, the decks that are going wide, are the decks that just try not to interact with the mid-range decks on the axis they want to interact with. They're the decks that don't care how many creatures your opponents play and don't care how many removal spells your opponents have, which means you're probably not playing creatures.
Yeah.
So you're probably either a really, really, really dedicated control deck like Academy or something that is playing Wildfire to blow up lands, and it just so happens to also kill all your opponent's creatures.
Yeah.
Or you're playing a combo deck. Like Storm or High Tide or...
Yeah, I think Wildfire is actually the best Wrath of God in the format right now.
Definitely.
Because you get rid of all these very greedy mana bases.
Yeah. I have to sack four lands, and they look down at five duels, and they're like, they all produce different colors, and...
And now you're...
They get one.
You have like a wooded foothills in your deck, and your volcanic isle, like all your mountains have been destroyed, and you need a blue source, and it's just awful. And so, like decks like that, right? Best Wrath of God, best, like they can pump out threats that are very hard to deal with.
Yeah.
They just go over the top and then going underneath. Right, so like you said, the Storm list.
Yeah.
Storm lists, so like a High Tide list.
Although that being said, Robin played on Monday and 0-2'd with Storm. Hey, I didn't ask him who he got paired up against, but he said he didn't play poorly, he didn't get super unlucky, he just got beat.
He fought Josh.
Okay.
For sure.
In the 0-1 bracket. Yeah.
I don't know his other opponent. I can't say off the top of my head.
I think he might have got Gaddock Teagued.
That'll happen. Gaddock Teague is...
There's a lot of Teagues running around.
Yeah, I really hate that guy.
Teague?
He's not fun. And they always have the Caracas.
Yeah,
one
they always
time,
save
don't
him.
Have the Caracas. And they're just like, whoops, here we go. And they're like, okay. And if they have a bird on... This is where not bolting the bird can get you. Because if they play bird, and then you're like, sure, why not? And next turn, they're like... Gaddock Teague, Caracas,
no!
Special game as a game action, play my Caracas, and you're just like, well, all right, I've lost.
Yep.
But yeah, anyways, so like the Storm decks, or more importantly, the Graveyard decks again. We mentioned Reanimator.
Yeah.
Oath of Druids.
Yep. There's very little hate for Oath, and you could play it without even playing Forbidden Orchard in your deck. That's how many creatures are running around
right now. When you said that it doesn't matter how many creatures they have, I mean, Oath does kind of count, but they only really need one.
As long as it's a greater than zero number.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't care.
You're good to go. And here's a spicy little ditty. Enchantress. And I'm not saying this because I'm an Enchantress fanboy.
Yes, you are.
Sure. Okay, I am. I'll admit that. part of me isn't saying this. But think about it. The only way that they can interact with enchantments,
but there's so much enchantment hate from those decks. Like all the removal kills enchantments, they're playing Rexage, Casali Pride Mage,
okay, four color blood. Who plays that?
Jermoka's Command.
Okay, sure. There are plenty of cards that can attack enchantments.
Yep.
But what if there aren't any? Because everybody else is trying to go over top or underneath, or they're on Jeskai, and you just win that matchup lottery. And you're just against a Storm deck, and you're like, turn two, rest in peace.
All right, I'll build you Enchantress. You can play it.
Oh, baby.
And then I'll beat you.
All right. What, with Academy?
Yeah.
Wildfire doesn't hit enchantments, baby.
It kills all your lands.
Oh, that's fine.
How many of those enchantments tap for mana?
Elladamry's Vineyard adds two. We're not playing that card.
Adds two for me.
I also play Sacred Ground. I don't,
no,
but
don't.
We could. You can play Life from the Loam in that deck.
How are you casting it?
You sandbag a land?
Or
I don't
two?
Have a good option. Okay, you're making my argument seem really bad here, but I swear to God, Enchantress is perfectly fine right now.
It's fine, but I just don't think it's certainly not a tier one deck.
No, of course not. I mean, The day Enchantress is a tier one deck is the day I get Sarah Sanctum tattooed on my back. Don't hold me to this.
It's even on video now.
Oh no. My back piece was supposed to be a Gaia's Cradle, and now I betrayed it for another legendary land from Saga.
The worst kind of treachery.
Now, the worst kind of treachery is when they momentary blink their creature. That's a magic joke for all you viewers out there. No, I think it's fine. Like, it's obviously it's not tier one.
Yeah,
but yeah.
It's certainly as well positioned right now as it's ever going to be.
I do think you have a decent academy matchup. Maybe not the Wildfire Academy, but a more traditional one because you play like the Seal of Cleansing and Seal of Primordium.
Yeah.
To just get their stuff, you can play Aura of Silence.
Yeah. Well, that card's good.
You can just straight up play Stony Silence if you really want to be a jerk. If you're playing Enchantress,
it depends if you're probably not playing Stony Silence because you're probably playing Rest in Peace Helm, and you probably want to be able to activate your Helm.
Yeah, you know, that's fine. You're playing Orotog to get rid of your Stony Silence. You're not playing Orotog.
You're playing Seal of Cleansing.
Yeah, yeah.
Get my own Stony Silence, play Helm you.
Yeah, it's perfect. Just get your own thing and then Treasure Cruise.
All right. To get off this Enchantress nonsense.
One last thing, though, on Enchantress. I do want to talk about the best win con I've ever seen for Enchantress.
Helix Pinnacle?
Second best win con I've ever seen for Enchantress. And this is almost... It's not a joke, but it's something that we mention when people are trying to build these like slow, grindy decks to kill people, and they are looking for a win con. Surge also played a lot of Enchantress. Him and I brewed Enchantress for quite some time, and his list, his win con was playing Emrakul. But let's not stop there because Emrakul can't. No, he can't attack with a moat. Anyways, he was playing Emrakul, but it wasn't enough to just attack his opponent. He wanted to cast Emrakul with Blind Obedience in play and extort his opponent, and then Caracas his Emrakul back to his hand. So every turn, he would go Emrakul, extort, take the extra turn trigger, Caracas it back, then rinse and repeat, and just kill his opponent.
The best Slaver Lock ever?
Yeah, it's...
It's only slightly more mana than Slaver Lock. It's only 16 as opposed to 13.
And it's still no, it's 17 because you need Caracas.
Oh right, all right. It's only four mana.
17 mana. Who needs that?
I wonder if I can put that into Academy.
Blind Obedience or Caracas Emrakul?
All three. You get to 17 mana in that deck all the time.
Moving on. where are we going next?
Our new section here.
I just called it Deck Doctors.
Yeah, so we sort of did that before. I think we'll need to come up with a new name.
Okay, Deck Degenerates.
That's much better.
Sure. So this is a work in progress name, Deck Degenerates. We went to the Highlander Facebook page.
Yeah.
Although for future broadcasts, feel free to email us lists. We'll give you the appropriate email.
Of course.
And we asked, hey, folks, do you have any decks that you're not quite sure on your build or any ideas?
Or just something you've been working on that you want us to look at and sort of point you in the right direction? Or like you're coming over from a different format and you have a rough idea of what you want to play, but you're not sure exactly what a list would look like.
Yeah, you want to convert the commander list to this? Even
if you don't have a list to send us, just like a relatively fleshed out idea is a... It's good enough.
We would give us something to work on.
Yeah.
Jeremy and I will come up with... One or two lists and kind of talk about it a bit and give some ideas. And then an actual... both of our lists, or possibly like one or maybe three. Like if we both say, this is what you have, this is what I have, this is what we came together to have.
Yeah.
They'll be posted and you'll be able to look at it.
Yeah, they'll be in the footnotes of the show.
And this was pretty sweet because we ended up getting... God, I think it was 13, 14 people in like 3 hours or so.
It was awesome.
Just being like, this is what I want to do. Maybe even more. I imagine there were more people. I know for certain two more people commented after I was like, look at all these things that came our way.
I think the final number was 13.
And there wasn't just new players too. It wasn't just players that are getting into the format.
Yeah, there was.
We had, you know, veterans, people that had been playing their archetype for ages, saying like, okay, I've been doing this forever, but like, I'm not getting the results I want, or I want to change this. Like, what do you recommend?
Exactly. And that's the thing. It doesn't have to be a new idea. It can also be an old idea that you're just not sure. It's not putting up the same results you used to. You're not sure how to tweak it for the current meta.
It's always helpful to get an outsider opinion, right? Like, yeah. I went to Josh to ask him, after Josh Lane started playing Jeskai, I went to Josh to ask him what I should cut from Jeskai. Because it's so helpful.
When over the years, you and I have bounced so many ideas off each other.
Yeah, we have flung just crap back and forth. And
it is mostly crap.
Lost a lot of credit. but the one list that we received
most votes for.
Yeah, we received two separate lists that one of them had two like people involved in one of them. The other one had two people involved in one of them. And then I picked a list that Serge had sent to me that I thought was great and wanted to also take a look at.
Yeah.
And so the general idea was a Boros equipment list.
Yeah, so it plays more equipment than you'd usually play in an aggro deck, but to sort of take advantage of that, we're playing a bunch of the creatures that care about equipment.
Yeah, so before we dive into it, do we have the names of the individuals? I think I included it down at the bottom.
Yeah, we have
Sean Heath, Serge Jaeger, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right.
Nick Picard and Steven Riva.
Yeah. So shout outs to you guys for sending the list.
Thanks for sending your lists in, being the first ones on Deck Degenerates.
Patent pending. so we took obviously it's like a Boros equipment
there
list.
There were a couple lists we got.
Yeah. And both the list that Sean sent that Nick Picard had been talking to him about was more of a white weenie list that had a huge equipment theme. Like every creature that cared about equipment.
I also think it played double digit amounts of equipment.
Yeah, I think there was 18 artifacts in there or something ludicrous. Yeah,
like it was playing Stoneforge Masterwork.
Okay, that's bigger than I was. That's bigger than I thought we'd be going.
Yeah.
That's a little scary, but it's on the right track.
Yeah.
Creatures plus equipment equals a lot of damage.
Yes.
And then
Serge and Steven.
Yes. Serge had almost like an affinity list.
Yeah, his was heavily artifact themed.
Yeah, Boros affinity, basically.
With artifacts.
With a lot of equipment.
And like some of the guys that cared about equipment, he was like testing them.
Yeah, Serge has had just this ongoing love for Pure Steel Paladin.
Yep.
So it's understandable that he would go.
Well, Serge loves everything to do with the Metalcraft mechanic.
Yeah, that is absolutely
true. If it says Metalcraft on the card, Serge has probably played it in Highlander.
Yep. And then the last one was, I forget his name off the top of my head.
Steven.
Was it Steven? Yeah.
I think
His list, which was like a Boros equipment list.
Yeah.
So similar to Sean and Nick's, but had a lot of elements that Serge's list also had.
Yeah.
So a lot of artifact things as well, more kind of tricks surrounding actual combat.
Exactly.
Some reach.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so...
So what we did is we sort of amalgamated the two. And so we sort of cut a bit of the artifact theme from Steven's deck list. We sort of shaved a little bit of equipment and equipment matter stuff from the mono white list, upped the power level of the cards overall, and streamline the deck a bit.
And we added a lot of cards with double strike.
Yes.
Because if there's one thing Sword of Fire and Ice likes, it's double strike. Because if you slap, like, I think...
You know what else likes double strike? Sword of Feast and Famine.
Yes. And Sword of War and Peace.
And Umezoa's Jitte.
Those are all very good pieces of equipment. Even Bonesplitter likes double strike.
Actually, like, I don't think there's a better piece of equipment than Jitte with double strike. Getting to hit them first and then like and then buffing your guy for regular damage so your guy lives and their guy dies.
Yeah, that's a nightmare. An absolute nightmare.
Yeah.
So we added a pretty much every low-cost double striker to the deck. Fencing Ace, Boros Swift Blade, Viashino Slaughtermaster.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have any way to... Oh, no, you do. Because Viashino Slaughtermaster has an activated ability. There we go. Where play a green and a black to give it +1/+1. And now you're probably thinking, how are you going to activate this?
Mox Opal.
You have Mox Opal, you have Mox Diamond.
Mana Confluence.
You got Mana Confluence, and you got City of Brass. So you can do it. Don't let your dreams just be dreams, folks. Get that Slaughtermaster in there.
Pump them up.
Yeah, and nobody will see it coming. No. I actually forgot what its mana cost was. I thought for some reason this guy, just off the top of my head, I thought he had like a Mardu cost. Okay. Like I thought he was I knew he was red, but I thought his activation was black and white. And so I was like, oh, this is easy. We just add a scrub land and a Badlands in there for just the mid-combat fetch. Get it? And then pump. But
Not quite.
And I wasn't ready to add Bayou, Savannah,
Scrubland, and Badlands.
Not yet, especially because we're running Blood Moon and Magus of the Moon.
Yeah.
Which might be a little greedy.
No, I think it's correct. Every deck needs some amount of disruption. Some amount of the time, you're not going to be able to race your opponent, and you need to disrupt them.
Yeah, and, well, that fits into the rest of the creatures, because there aren't enough double strike creatures to just play that. Yeah. You have your equipment matters creatures as well, but you want to flesh it out. And so you get, I think we added cards like Thalia,
yep.
Leonin Arbiter, Aven Mind Sensor, just guys you do not want to have to fight because they are just a pain.
Yeah, and we added some other cards that are good with equipment, like Spike Shot Elder. His activated ability is super, super good with equipment.
Mother of Runes, which is good with creatures.
Pian, Kira, Nalar, some cards that just give you multiple bodies to attach equipment to, relevant activated ability, evasion.
Yeah, you just, I mean, evasion's huge in this deck.
Yeah.
You don't really have a huge artifact theme, but you play a lot of artifacts, obviously, because you want fast mana and you want equipment.
Exactly.
And for disruption, you get Phyrexian Revoker.
Yeah.
And you want these cards that, like Pian, Kira, Nalar, Thopter Engineer, they give you extra bodies, they have some relevant abilities, they give you an option for reach. And then I think we're playing Etch Champion, which is a little suspect, but I mean, if you have an Etch Champion in equipment, that's two, right? So yeah,
you only need one more artifact to turn on as protection from All Colors ability.
And you have Ancient Den and Great Furnace, I think, in there.
And you have some Moxen and...
Yeah. So I think this deck is, I mean...
Certainly spicy.
Yeah, it's definitely a deck that you would want to play around with a bit. And then be like, wow, yeah. I got mana screwed. Thanks, Ben and Jeremy. and then maybe you want to cut some of the other cards.
Yeah.
But, oh, I forgot Hearthfire Hobgoblin. I always forget Hearthfire Hobgoblin.
The triple Boros guy.
I was even challenged to go through all 10 hybrid cards from Shadowmoor Eventide last night, and I got 10 for 10. How did I forget this guy? But yeah, you play, like, maybe your mana needs a little bit of work, but that's always the case, right?
Yeah. and then the mana commitments in this deck are pretty stringent.
Yeah, but think of it, and this isn't that far... I already used the word far-fetched today. This isn't that...
Out there
to go turn one... you can go turn one Core Duelist, which he's a 1-1 for one that gains double strike when equipped. Yeah, you can go... Even land mocks any double striker, Boros Swiftblade. And then the next turn, Grafted Wargear.
Attack for eight
on turn two. And he's at a burn range.
Yeah.
And you play burn, so you got even more reach.
Exactly. So what are the points we're looking at in this deck?
We had Mox Ruby,
yep,
and Mox Pearl.
That puts us up to six.
That's
then,
six.
Then we had, I think we had Stoneforge Mystic.
Yep.
Jitay,
yep,
puts us up to eight, and then I think we're gonna play Mana Crypt to round out the last two.
Original list had Skull Clamp in it with no 10th point, and then you suggested adding Mana Vault, and then just said, okay, how about we just cut Manavolt and Skullclamp and add Mana Crypt?
Yeah.
And I think that's, I agree with you, that's just much better.
So this deck just really wants to get in before your opponent can set up. You don't want them to start playing 4/4s. You don't want them to counter your equipment. You want to get in under counter spells, and you want to go fast.
Yeah.
And Skullclamp is best in decks with a bunch of burn spells. We have a couple burn spells, but not enough to make it as good as it should be.
No. So it's better off just being able to reliably get... Because you're a low-curve deck, and swords do take a decent amount of mana.
Yeah.
And Mana Crypt 8 helps that, right?
Yeah.
Mana Crypt kind of just gives you your free equipment.
Exactly.
It lets you... If you have a Mana Crypt, even if you draw it on turn 3, if you have a sword, then that's just a sword and a quip. All in one go.
Yeah.
One card we forgot that I think maybe could see play is Batterskull. Because there isn't much lifelink in this deck. But
that's true.
You have Sword of War.
Getting back some of the life would certainly be useful. And it's always a powerful play to get off Stoneforge Mystic.
It's not included in the list, too. But I saw this guy from my good old days of drafting triple Scars of Mirrodin block. Occasionally, you would need to pick up a bear or two in the deck I'd like to play.
Yep.
And Sunspear Shikari.
Oh, yeah.
It's a 2/2 for two that has...
if
it's
equipped as instant?
No. That's Leonin Shikari. This is, if it's equipped, it has first strike and lifelink. Slap a Grafted War Gear and go to town. Or Bone Splitter, because it's got... Look, we already talked. First strike and lifelink are broken.
It's true.
And it gets them both for practically free. Card's nuts.
Uh-huh.
I actually think this would be fine. This is definitely a card that you should, like, if you're thinking about playing this deck, and especially if you don't have some of the other cards for it, like, don't be afraid to include this draft common. Draft commons are a lot better than people think. Eldrazi Sky Spawner just won a Pro Tour.
Let's not get into that.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about that. What the heck are we playing?
Well, I have been playing Blue White Red, splashing two Black Cards Academy deck. The black cards I've been splashing are Sphinx of the Steel Wind and Tezzeret Agent of Bolas.
Quite good.
Yeah, both all-stars. The deck's super, super fun to play. You regularly get to Slaver Lock people, have 18 mana in play, and cast Time Spiral.
The best part about Slaver Locking people is that you get to play more than one deck during a night. And sometimes without even Academy Ruins, if you're against, like, Pattern Rector or Storm, you just get to kill them.
Yeah.
Which is always pretty fun.
Always fun.
Is that something you're going to keep playing, or you got anything else spicy that you're willing to let people know?
I think I'm going to try and play Mono White Splash Blue Aggro soon.
Are we talking... so we're White Weenie?
Yeah.
So white with blue?
Yeah.
For Geist of Sandcraft?
Yeah.
And for Trinkamage for Meekstone, because all your creatures have two power or less?
No.
All right, well, you lost me.
We are playing Liev Sky Knight.
Oh, yeah, the best Sky Knight.
And Time Walk.
That's quite good.
Yeah.
You also get to play... She might be outclassed now. I used to, when I was playing White Weenie nonstop, I liked to play... In the blue splash, I liked playing Azorius Guildmage.
Yeah.
You can play Azorius Herald. Having that tapping ability is still pretty good.
Yeah. There's a couple spicy new cards coming out in Shadows of Vernistrad that got spoiled. The one mana Lantern Kami tapper.
Oh, the best Suntail Hawk in the world. Oh my god, I love Suntail Hawks so much. It started with Magic Battlegrounds for the Xbox. And now here I am, just Suntail Hawk.
I remember when you won a tournament with Mono White with Suntail Hawk in your deck, and
I believe a quote from the interview after that was, hey, it adds up. Or like, people laugh at Suntail Hawks, but they add up.
So you've been on this flying is broken thing for a long time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wasn't doing it with three power. I was doing it for one power. But, look at that. It does so many things.
It's the Deathrite Shaman of Suntail Hawks.
Oh, my God. It's practically a planeswalker.
So do you think you're going to stick with Jeskai? Or
I'm going to take a break from it. As much as I love, and I'm sorry, as much as I love playing dragons and swinging with them.
You love Llanowar Elves.
I love Llanowar Elves. I belong in the forest of Llanowar, you know? I don't feel the same without it.
I know.
And I have a bet that I need to win, so I have to...
Excellent.
I have to tooth and nail for Kiki Jiki and Craterhoof to kill somebody. Somebody. So that's on my menu. I also want to try building a red-blue... I called it red-blue prowess when we did the Monday metagame. And you're on, like, it's the Kiln Fiend, Nivik Cyclops, Dragon
Ops. I have a really sweet list for that deck. You should get at me.
The list I want to run gets to play Merchant Scroll, because you have the spicy line of Merchant Scroll, which 2-mana, sorcery, find any blue instant.
Yeah.
It's not just that you get to play Merchant Scroll for Ancestral Recall. It's that you get to Merchant Scroll for Shadow Rift.
Yep.
Now, you know what Shadow Rift
is. Oh, boy, do I ever.
But for those folks out there that didn't get to play, I imagine this might have been in Tempest Remastered or whatever the set was called.
Yeah.
It's one blue instant. Target creature gains shadow until end of turn.
Draw a card.
So you got your Kiln Fiend, and you Merchant Scroll, gets bigger. You find the Shadow Rift, cast Shadow Rift on your Kiln Fiend, gets bigger. Or if you have multiple creatures and they only have one guy,
what if they block with their Luteril Core?
Well, then I'm ruined. Nobody. I thought people forgot about Luteril Core.
That card's so good.
The deck actually just loses to Soltari Monk. You can't win. But I thought it was pretty spicy. I was thinking about splashing Taiga for a Berserk. And you can play Dizzy Spell.
Then no.
Rune Chantress Pike.
That card's, yeah. Seriously, I need to send you my list.
Okay. Ship me the list.
I will.
But yeah.
I think that's about all we have. Yeah. So we'll do our usual shout-outs at the end. Adding one. Thanks to Loading Ready Run for letting us use their awesome studio.
It's been fun.
Hopefully we'll be back.
It's been fantastic here. These chairs are much more comfortable than your bed.
I mean, my bed's pretty comfortable.
Yeah, okay, but you know what I mean. Sturdy.
Yeah. Shout out to MTG Cast for hosting our podcast. You can find us on all our social media, at Can Highlander on Twitter.
Yep.
MTG or Can Highlander MTG at gmail.com.
Yep.
CanadianHighlander.wordpress.com.
Mm-hmm. Canadian Highlander on YouTube.
Yep.
The Facebook group, MTG Canadian Highlander. Always people there. There's a bunch of degenerates, such as Jeremy and myself, talking about degenerate decks. And sometimes we talk about things that aren't as broken.
And are just good.
Yeah. And if you are interested in sending your decks or figuring out something like that,
right.
Feel free.
This is when we're supposed to
Feel free to ship them to us, either through the email, as mentioned, or you can just post it on the group. And, we'll pick that up.
Yeah, so if you want to have your deck featured on Deck Degenerates, send it to us by email, and we'll pick one and do it next week.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
But other than that,
there can only be one. See ya.
See ya.